Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Martin Straith, founder of Trend News Online at thetrendletter.com. He's speaking to us from Coquitlam, BC, which is just east of Vancouver. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be back with you.
You mentioned your presentation at the World Outlook Financial Conference in Vancouver last weekend was to a packed room, standing room only. How was the conference?
Oh, it was great. It's always nice to see, you know, all those faces out in the audience. Lots of good energy in the room. We were part of the investing energy segment, so we covered various energy investment ideas we like. We tell our subscribers what we are buying and why, and what we're selling and why. But the nice thing about being there in person is that you can show the charts, and we find that when you can show clear trends, either developing or, you know, entrenched ones, it makes it so much easier for the average investor to understand, you know, what's making the markets move like they are. So presentation was primarily about energy plays, but it was great, you know, to chat with folks after the presentation. We came to visit our booth, and we got to, you know, talk about how all of these sectors are interconnected. And by the way, there was quite a few of listeners of your show drop by to say hi, and, you know, get to talk to them about the markets. Now, we also did a drone draw. Proceeds went to the Heads Up Guys org, so that's for men, mental health services for men. And, you know, just for your audience, any guys that are having any challenges out there, this is a fantastic organization. Headsupguys.org is how you can find them. And so, yeah, all in all, it was a great conference.
You started your presentation off with an Albert Einstein quote. What was that all about?
Yeah, I did. I started with a picture actually of Einstein. You know what he looks like. It's a pretty good image sitting there. So when people came in, this is what they saw. So I started with it was his definition of insanity, right? So, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. So my point was, for investors, you know, making the same mistake, investment mistake, over and over again, hoping for better, different results, can be pretty devastating to your portfolio. So basically what I was referring to is where, you know, most investors, when they buy stocks, they always have a reason. They know when they want to buy, and they buy. But most of them don't seem to have a plan to sell. And that's really actually why I started the Trendletter way back in 2002, because I had a bunch of friends who got killed by the dot-com crash, and they didn't sell. So, you know, how often do you see an investor, he buys a stock, maybe the stock goes up 20, 30, 40, 50%, but he has no plan to take any profits from it. And it was very interesting. So at the conference, you know, a bunch after our presentation, because we talked about uranium a fair bit, a lot of people came by and they were just glowing, you know, how their uranium stocks have done so well. And so these are different people, different groups. So it wasn't like it was a big group. But so each person who mentioned this to me, I said to them, you know, what's your exit strategy? At what point are you taking profits? And they just stared at me, you know, and here they are. They've got gains of, you know, 200, 300, you know, 600%. And they had no idea where they would even take any profit from it. And every one of them said that they were holding for the long term. So to me, man, if you've got gains like that, it's insane. There's that insanity thing. To not have a strategy to take some profits, you know, as the stocks start to roll back. So, you know, there's no gain until you make some sort of sell. So, You know, I've seen so many times we've had our subscribers where we've had some really good gains on some different sectors, and then we put our sell in, and it hits our sell, and the day we're out, and they, you know, later tell us they never did that. They just held on all the way back down. So you need to have an exit strategy, and the best time to do that is before you buy a stock. You know, when you're nice and calm, when you're planning on buying it, also have a plan. What are you going to do if it goes the wrong way? And, you know, if the stock continues to rise, then continue to raise your sell stop. So that's what that was all about.
What's your take on uranium today?
Well, like I say, you know, that was certainly, we talked a fair bit about uranium at the conference. Yeah, I'm very bullish on nuclear power long term for sure. I mean, it's stable, reliable power. You know, nuclear plants, they run 24/7, continuous source of power. And it doesn't matter what the weather is. You know, it can be freezing cold winter. It can be a hot summer day. It can be daytime, nighttime. It can be windy or calm. You know, we've got, lots of noise about, you know, solar power and wind power, which are great. That's fine. But again, you know, at night, there is no solar power. And during the day or at night, if it's calm out and there's no wind, you've got no wind power. So those are intermittent. But nuclear is constant, and it gives that base load power. So that's, you know, at night, what was Chris Rock line? Sure is easy to read with all this light. You know, at night, you need something to be providing that power. And that's where nuclear, to me, has a real play to have. It's also got, you know, obviously low greenhouse gas emissions. And what we're finding, too, is, you know, public sentiment is really changing. Even around, amongst the environmentalists, we're starting to see some people getting back on side. And, you know, if you look back at the COP28 meeting a couple months ago, you know, we had 20 countries, Canada, U.S., UK, France. They made this launch declaration to triple nuclear energy. And, you know, the guy that was, you know, leading this whole thing, it was John Kerry, you know, the U.S., you know, environmental guru, the same guy that 6-7 years ago hated nuclear power. And now he's the main proponent of tripling nuclear energy. So that's massive. I think that's a huge, huge thing. Then you got technological advances. I mean, you got France, their new plants, they're actually recycling up to 95% of their spent fuel. So they're dramatically reducing the radioactive waste. And then, you know, new plants, you've got 60 nuclear plants under construction. You've got 110 planned across the world. There's 436 currently operating. So if we put all this math together, you know, if the declaration to triple nuclear, well, if it got 436 today, tripling, that would be 1,308, the equivalent of 1,308 nuclear plants. So you've got 60 under construction, 110 planned. Well, that's 170, but that's still a shortfall of, you know, over 700 nuclear plants. Now, you know, there's fusion energy. I just saw an article yesterday where in the UK they've made some big, you know, big progress in fusion. But we're still talking decades before that's going to be out there and viable. So that, you know, that means you're going to need an awful lot of uranium for the next few decades going forward. But the big key to me is that, you know, in the short term, uranium's been on a parabolic rise. And it's very similar to what we saw when we first went into uranium back in 2003. You know, for 4 years up to 2007, it just went from, you know, 11 pounds up to 147. Well, we've just gone from, when we bought it back in 2020, it went from 26 and now it's up to 100. So, you know, these things always pull back. You know, we talked a lot in the presentation about, you know, the supply-demand price cycle, and that's really what's happening. So it's interesting. At the conference, you know, I said you really watch for a pullback, and we show some support levels for uranium stocks to come back to. And here we are this week. You know, Cameco is down 13%. Uranium's price is coming down. All of those stocks are coming down. So this is going to be a good buying opportunity, I think, for people that missed out.
You also talked about oil and gas. What's your outlook there?
Well, you know, the thing about oil and gas is, you know, we hear the COP28 people, government officials telling us how evil oil is and that how we need to get rid of it. I just saw Barclays Bank is now there. You know, they're going to cut off financing for oil projects. So, you know, in the presentation, I showed this really cool chart, that just demonstrates how much oil has such a critical role in our lives. You know, our clothing, you know, our phones, our toys, electronics, computers, you know, office equipment, agriculture, sporting goods, beauty products, you know, household items, you know, construction materials, and clothing. So it's, you know, it's this incredible thing where we seem to, all the people that are proposing that we're going to all be driving EV cars, so therefore we don't need oil anymore. It's, you know, even in the car, your EV car, you've got tires. You're driving on asphalt roads. I mean, so I just think it's crazy to suggest that we don't need fossil fuels. So then if you look at the demand side of things, you've got growing demand, especially in emerging countries. You know, in India, you know, 14% of their population, so that, you know, 1.4 billion, they don't have electricity. A billion people in the world do not have electricity. So, and they want it. They want that stuff. And, you know, all these clothes and all these little gadgets and toys we have that oil is a major component of, these emerging countries, these people want those as well. So I think, you know, just based on demand, we're going to see a continual boom there. And then you look at the supply side. So, you know, you've had a lack of investment, just like, you know, Barclays Bank, all these banks and governments have been pushing these banks not to fund these projects. So capital expenditure in the oil sector, 30 to 40 year low. You got rig counts continue to decline. You know, and again, like it's like these cops and the government people, they, you know, they're hate fossil fuels. It's like they don't even know that the clothes they're wearing, their own cell phone, their own car, driving on those roads, that's all oil products. So what they've done, you know, they've increased windfall taxes, they've increased regulations, they've allowed no new permitting. So, you know, again, that supply-demand cycle, you've got an increase in demand, you've got growing demand, you've got a global concerted effort to cut supply. Well, I mean, very simply, you're going to have a big supply problem going forward. So to me, you're going to have $100 oil for sure, likely 150 or higher, and over the next few years. I mean, if you look at oil right now, you know, based on seasonality, and, you know, we showed a chart of that. Based on seasonality, you know, here we are early February. That's exactly when oil typically has its longest run of the year. And, you know, based on seasonality, oil runs from early February right into late June. And so then that's your best period. So obviously, you know, we've also got, you know, Middle East tensions right now. So that's giving oil a boost. So when you, if you looked at a chart of oil, I put up this chart, and it shows that, you know, we had that jump up right into, what was it, October, and then oil has been on a downtrend ever since, and it tried all through that. It tried to break through $78. It tried it three times in December, couldn't do it. And just last week, it tried it again, could not do it. So that's four attempts at $78. So now it's dropped back down. Today, I'd say it's back up, so it's 76, 75 when I last looked here. So now we're looking at, we're probably going to have another test at 78. If we can break through it on this one, we should be able to run up to about 85, I would think. And, you know, by the way, I actually re-recorded our presentation for our subscribers who weren't able to attend the conference. And your people, your listeners can access that. They can simply go to our YouTube channel. So just Google the Trend Letter YouTube, and you should find it, and you'll notice it because it's a picture of Alfred Einstein staring at you, talking about insanity. So yeah, so they can have a look at that. And in that video, in that presentation, we highlight 12 energy stocks that we recommended for 2024.
The last few times you've been on this show, you were looking for gold to reach over $3,200 this year. Is that still on the table?
Yeah, well, gold's been trading in, you know, a pretty tight range, you know, 2000 to say 2100. It's now in a wedge pattern, so we should soon see, you know, which way it's going to break. You know, when I'm looking right now here, looking down, it's down about $9, so it's right at 2040 right now. Now, the thing about gold is, you know, most gold bugs, I mean, they're aware of it, but for the average investor, you know, gold is a safe haven asset. And by that, not just for investors, but also for countries as well. You know, when Russia invaded Ukraine, Central bankers became buyers of gold because, you know, once the U.S. started weaponizing the dollar and they kicked Russia out of that SWIFT international payment system, that was a real eye-opener for all these other central bankers around the world. And I'm not talking about like just Russia or China, but any country other than the U.S. and its close allies, because, you know, weaponizing that SWIFT system, freezing U.S. assets, that had all these non-allies of the U.S. looking around and going, you know, whoa, you know, we got to watch. We need some alternative here. So one of the first things we saw recently, we saw these BRIC countries, you know, looking to create, you know, some of this gold-backed currency, which, you know, by the way, I don't see happening for all kinds of reasons. You know, one of the main being the diverse economies. I mean, we're talking about Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and now they've invited, you know, Argentina, Egypt, Iran, what's the other one? I think the Emirates is in there. So they've all been invited to be part of this big, you know, this big club. And I mean, can you think of a more diverse group of cultures and economies? I mean, you know, the EU's have it all, you know, have it's all kinds of trouble trying to be this one currency and do this one big happy family. And I just can't imagine this group being able to pull all this together and then become this really powerful alternative to the U.S. dollar. But the key for gold going forward is the U.S. essentially has informed the world that its dollar reserves are not safe and that anyone could be kicked out of this, you know, U.S. dollar club. So, you know, all these other countries are looking for ways to get around it, and they are buying gold. So, you know, they're looking for alternatives. They're buying gold. So I'm very bullish gold this year. Near-term resistance, 2100 right now, 2150, support 2000, you know, stronger support at 1945. But one of the keys for gold to watch here is that the gold stocks are still on sale. They have not kept up with the movement of bullion. And once the miners start to run higher, I think we're going to see a real spike in gold prices. You know, ultimately, I can see gold, you know, moving, you know, with the U.S. dollar, with stocks, and as we see global tensions expand, I think you can see gold move higher. And we do see 2024 as a real year of turmoil here. So long story short, Jim, yeah, to answer your question, I do see gold pushing past 3,000, you know, 3,200, and that could happen certainly this year.
What do you see for the U.S. and Canadian dollars?
Well, I say it all the time with currencies. It's really about, you know, the U.S. dollar. So if the U.S. dollar is strong, then that negatively affects most other currencies. You know, it negatively affects commodities, equities, precious metals. And when the dollar is weak, those other things tend to rally. So, you know, we're seeing right now, I mean, seems kind of unbelievable. The U.S. economy just keeps rolling along here. You know, we have this massive inflation. You know, everybody thought, you know, well, as that, you know, they tighten, you know, the interest rates and all that, that was going to, you know, force the economy to likely a recession. Now, that still could happen, certainly. But it's been rolling along, and that helps the currency. And so the U.S. has been really strong uptrend since the dollar has been a strong uptrend since, you know, late December after that big decline from last October. So the markets, the interesting thing to me is the markets believe that the Fed is going to cut rates before the ECB and cut more than, you know, they're talking about six or seven times. And I totally disagree. Longer term, I expect the U.S. economy is going to continue to be stronger than most of these other ones. Certainly, you know, Europe and Japan, I can't imagine that they are going to outpace the U.S. So that would mean that the U.S. dollar is going to be stronger. It's not, you know, and it's not like we like the U.S. dollar so much. It's just, you know, it's that, you know, the least ugly house on the block. You know, all these currencies, they're just paper currencies. So, yeah, you know, ultimately, they're all going to crash and burn. But I don't see the U.S. dollar being the first one to go down. I think you're going to see the euro, the Japanese yen, those economies, they're in a much worse shape than the U.S. Now, the other thing is, you know, 2024, I mentioned a little earlier, that's going to be a wild ride here. It's going to be a real roller coaster up and down. So you got 24 countries this year are having an election. That's the most ever in history. And in almost every election in the last year, the ruling government has been given the boot here. So, you know, you can expect a lot of civil unrest. And, you know, and of course, one of those 64 elections is south of the border here in the U.S. And that, you know, that's going to be an absolute gong show. It's going to be a ton of civil unrest. And with civil unrest, you know, we expect to see capital is going to flow into the U.S. dollar for safety, even though, you know, for many people, that's really counterintuitive. But that's what always happens. The U.S. dollar is the safe haven play for currencies. So, and, you know, it's really important for investors to understand how all these things are connected. So short-term resistance for the U.S. dollar, B104, near-term support, B102. Looking at the Canadian, you know, like I say, again, it's all connected to the U.S. dollar. So since December, the Canadian dollar has been trending lower. It's now in a wedge pattern. You know, the Canadian economy is much weaker than the U.S., and I expect Canada's going to fall into a recession sooner than later. And, you know, if that happens, I expect the Bank of Canada is going to cut rates before the Fed. If they do that, well, that's going to cause the Canadian dollar to fall versus the U.S. dollar. So Canadians right now is trading at 74.3. Resistance is 75.8. Support be 73.25. And longer term, again, I think the Canadian economy is much weaker than the U.S. I think the Canadian dollar is probably going to drop below 70 cents in the next year.
We'll have more with Martin Straith right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Martin Straith. Martin, what's your outlook for the euro and yen?
Well, the yen, you know, the yen has this almost perfect inverse relationship to the dollar. And really interesting. So, when the dollar goes up, the euro goes down almost exactly the same amount, and vice versa. Now, a really interesting note of Germany today showing their industrial production dropped for the seventh consecutive month. And you have to remember that Germany is supposed to be the engine that drives Europe. Well, you know, I mean, that engine looks like it's driving Europe into a recession. And, you know, as you noted, you know, the European economies are weaker than the U.S. So I expect that the ECB is going to cut rates sooner than the Fed, you know, even though that's counter to what the mainstream seems to think. And that would mean that the euro currency is going to decline, I mean, against the U.S. dollar. You know, anybody that cuts rates first is going to, their currency is going to go down. So it all depends which central bank goes first. You know, if the ECB cuts before the Fed, then the euro is going to drop. I mean, if the Fed does cut first, well, then the euro would rise and the U.S. dollar would drop. Now, looking at the yen, that's a really interesting story. You know, while all the other central banks, you know, aggressively raised rates over the last year and a bit, you know, fighting inflation, Japan did nothing. You know, the U.S. Fed rate is 5.5%. Canada is 5%. Japan's central rate, it's been almost a year, it's been minus 0.10%. So capital just fled the Japanese yen, seeking better returns in other places. Now, for many months, you know, we saw a lot of expectations that the Bank of Japan is going to intervene and give the yen a boost, but they frustrated traders, you know, I mean, literally for the last year, and not budging, and so leaving the rate negative. Now, since mid-November, the yen had been rising because there has been more and more rumors that the Bank of Japan was finally going to start raising rates. But, you know, since the start of this year, the yen is right back into its free fall. It's down 2% already in 2024. And I honestly think that traders have just given up on the Bank of Japan to act. So in the big picture, again, all of these currencies, you know, I still see the U.S. dollar as that least ugly one. And I see that Europe, Japan, and Canada are in worse economic shape than the U.S. So ultimately, I think the U.S. dollar is just going to remain stronger over the next couple of years. Now, it's going to be, you know, there's going to be volatility for sure. Certainly when somebody starts cutting rates, that's going to start moving things around. But generally, overall, I think the U.S. dollar is going to be stronger than most people think.
At the Vancouver conference, you offered attendees some great special rates, some with 65% off. Are you willing to extend that offer to our listeners?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, they can just go to, I think I mentioned it earlier, if you go to the, so you wanted the specials, specials were, go to the website, thetrendletter.com, and on the front page, next to the subscriber button, you'll see a logo there. It's got the, and it shows the, on that logo, it shows the special rate. And you just click on that. That should take you to the special page. And if you can't find it or it doesn't work, whatever, just send us a note at info@thetrendletter.com and we will send you a link.
Martin, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure, Jim.
My guest has been Martin Straith, founder of Trend News Online at thetrendletter.com. If you have any questions for Martin or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask those questions for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.